It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. There's an area just south of Hale's Corner, which is in the southwest part of Milwaukee County. According to the Neighborhood Atlas put out by UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, it's one of the most disadvantaged zip codes in the state, but it's surrounded by some of the most advantaged zip codes in the state. What's going on with this neighborhood, and what are the health expectations of people who live there as opposed to people who live a mile or so north? Dr. Amy Kind collected this data that went into the creation of the neighborhood map. She is an associate professor of medicine and director of the Health Services and Care Research Program at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Kind, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you have enough degrees that it warrants a very long introduction like that.
Oh, thank you very much. I did enjoy school. It's true.
So before we get into this map, talk about the relationship in general between health and neighborhoods.
Absolutely. So neighborhoods are reflective of something that we call social determinants of health. Social determinants of health are things like housing and housing quality, income, employment, education. Each of these things are not necessarily in traditional biologic models of health. However, they impact health in ways that we have found to be incredibly profound. And when we think of these social determinants of health, we can actually find effects that suggest that they are some of the most profound experiences that we have as human beings towards our health. So they may impact the type of nutrition that we can access, the type of health care that we can get, and they influence deeply how our chances for living long, healthy lives, our chances for developing certain diseases and dying earlier of those diseases. They are things that we would like to raise attention to. And the metrics that have been created as part of this new tool, the Neighborhood Atlas, which is a free tool online and available through the University of Medicine School of Public Health.
And will be linked on
School
our
of Medicine
also.
And Public Health. Reflects a metric that measures a new tool that measures these different factors at the neighborhood level. So you might ask, how do we define a neighborhood? What is a neighborhood? Mm-hmm. In this case, a neighborhood is another name for a census block group. It's an area that includes anywhere from 1,500 to 3,000 people. So in a rural area, may be quite geographically large. But in a city might be very, very small. And these areas can be measured using metrics that measure things like housing quality and income, education, and employment. And then we can sum these up into a single score that allows us to rank neighborhoods across a city, across a county, across a state, or across the entire nation.
So I want to get to that score in a minute.
Yes.
But why neighborhoods as opposed to socioeconomic status?
So neighborhoods allow us to do things that we can't do at the single person level. Neighborhoods are fascinating. Neighborhoods impact health in so many ways. There have been a number of studies that suggest that if you are poor and living in a wealthier neighborhood, your health may be better than if you are equally as poor but living in a very disadvantaged neighborhood. There's been some work in the field of obesity, in the field of diabetes, in the field of some mental health outcomes that suggests that patients with those types of conditions do better in different environments.
Because they have access to better food? Because they have access to...
Potentially. Well, we need to learn more about this for sure, but I think the access to better food is likely a big one. Being able to easily access high-quality nutrition is much easier in certain parts of the country than in other parts of the country or certain neighborhoods as
right.
compared to other neighborhoods. Also, being able to be outside and engage in activities that are safe, that allow you to move your body, to exercise, may be much easier in certain parts of our state or our country than in others, in certain neighborhoods than in others. others, and the housing that you live in. So the quality of housing, if you have cockroaches, if you have mice in your house, that could trigger asthma, that can trigger allergies, it can trigger a whole bunch of other things.
And stress.
And stress likely leads to differences in health as well. So the neighborhood is important. Our individual socioeconomics, how wealthy we are or how educated we are or the choices we make are also important. But it seems like as we learn more, neighborhood itself, where you live, impacts your health in important ways.
And how is this different? How have going neighborhood by neighborhood, how is this different from what you have previously done or what researchers have previously done?
So a lot of previous research has been county by county. And at the county level, one can do quite a bit with the data that's available. We have much less data available at a neighborhood level. It's a much tinier geographic area. And so the types of measures that we can create look a little bit different when you look at county level measures as compared to neighborhood level measures. But because the neighborhood is so much smaller, it allows us to define someone's living environment much more precisely. And as you can imagine, a county like Milwaukee County or Dane County or any of the counties within Wisconsin or across the United States are a rich tapestry of different neighborhoods. They look different in different places. Mm-hmm. In Dane County, for instance, there are pockets that may be some of the wealthiest within the state, but then we also have neighborhoods that are very challenged as well. The same can be said for Milwaukee County. And when we look just at the county level, we lose that diversity and that rich tapestry of experience that we can measure a bit more precisely at the neighborhood level.
So talk to us about this index that you talked about at the beginning, Area Deprivation Index, or ADI. Mm-hmm. What goes into ADI?
So the Area Deprivation Index is a metric that is measured. It's built from something called American Community Survey data or census data, and it pulls in measures at this neighborhood level, at this very small level. Into this metric go 17 different components that reflect housing quality, income and poverty, both sides of that, education, and employment. And by using these 17 different metrics, we use statistical techniques in order to sum these into a single score that then can be ranked across any geographic area of that one wishes.
Okay, so I want to get back to this area, this neighborhood near Hales Corner in Milwaukee County. It's red all over that area, the southwest area of Milwaukee County. It's very blue. Blue means that it's a low ADI score and people are generally healthier. The neighborhoods
are less,
better.
They're less disadvantaged. I wouldn't use the word better because I think it's a just because a neighborhood is disadvantaged does not make it good or bad. It is just disadvantaged according to this metric.
Okay, so go ahead. This is the ADI. Is measuring the disadvantaged neighborhood over the non-disadvantaged neighborhood. So let's get to that terminology. But why is this particular thing just, I know you can't answer in particular for that particular neighborhood, but why would a red neighborhood be in a sea of blue neighborhoods?
Yes. In general, when we see this phenomenon across the United States, these red areas are often parks and public spaces. I can't speak to this one particular area in Milwaukee, but in general, when we see this, and we have seen this in Washington, D.C., in lots of large urban areas, what is happening is that the data, when it's collected, is collected in the field. It's also collected by phone or by paper survey. And when the field workers go out and find individuals who are living in these parks, homeless, or perhaps transient individuals, they will attribute the park as these person's place of residence.
So two things come from that. First of all, a homeless person isn't necessarily going to tell a doctor, oh, I live in this park. So how can that help health outcomes?
Right. So, and that homeless person may be moving all
right,
over the country
right,
and not even recognize a particular single place of residence.
And might not go to a doctor.
Might not go to a doctor, yeah. But the talking about these social determinants of health, someone's housing quality or someone's income or someone's employment can be a really uncomfortable experience for some of our patients, even those who are not necessarily homeless, but having other types of challenges. And if you're talking to your doctor and you're trying to manage your diabetes, but you can't keep your electricity on 24 hours a day in your house, so you can't keep your insulin safe in the refrigerator, how can you best manage that care? So these conversations are important and worth exploring.
We are going to explore this map and the reasons behind this health map when we come back. We are talking to Dr. Amy Kind, who put together a map of health expectations, neighborhood by neighborhood, that you can look at for any neighborhood you live in, even if you are living in Milwaukee or Minnesota or California or Massachusetts. It's The Morning Show. We'll be back in a moment. Sounds like a country song to me. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Where you live makes a difference in your health, and now UW-Madison researchers have maps that track how your neighborhood affects your health anywhere in the country. This map was put together by UW-Madison researcher Dr. Amy Kind, who is sitting here in the studio with me. And we want to take your calls if you have questions about this map. We actually have it on our website at WPR.org. You can call us at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Is there something about your neighborhood that you see as a stressor? Do you feel like you really would be healthier if you moved out of your house? Maybe your house has mold or has cockroaches. Is there a neighborhood that you would rather move into? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Dr. Kind, let's take up this what these red and blue designations on the map mean. One of the things that I found kind of fascinating about this is that Milwaukee, inner city Milwaukee, very, very red, right? The color counties in Milwaukee, blue, surprise, surprise. But much of the northern part of the state, at least in the northwest and the northeast, and kind of southwest also, is also really red. And my question is, are we talking about the same density of populations? And are we talking about the same kinds of outcomes? Do these people have anything in common?
I think these are great questions. When we look at the distribution of neighborhood disadvantage across a state like Wisconsin or even across the country, the first thing that we notice is that core inner cities in general across the United States, not for every city, but in general across the United States, tend to be highly disadvantaged. So that is one group that is that does have these challenges with neighborhood disadvantage. But the second most common group that we see across the U.S. in general, and certainly in Wisconsin, is that rural areas are also highly disadvantaged according to these social determinants of health. So when we think of these measures that are built on housing quality, education, income, and employment, our rural parts of the country, of the United States, as well as Wisconsin, do have these challenges as well. And these can be reflected in health outcomes, as we know.
So what do these people have in common? I guess that's what the core thing that I'm getting to. Are we talking about truly different populations of people who have different issues, or do they have the same kinds of issues? And is the approach to fixing these issues the same or different?
Well, certainly, I think every person is different. Every neighborhood is different. And this metric can only give us a sense of the level of challenge on these four general domains mm-hmm. of housing, income, education, and employment. So obviously an inner city, because of the way it's constructed, because of the geography, because of the fact that it's in a city, is going to be quite a bit different than our rural areas. However, when you look at the performance on these different metrics of social determinants of health, we see a lot of similarities. And it raises real profound questions, like you are touching on, of where are the commonalities? So often we're looking at differences. And so often, I think these different groups tend to be think of themselves as very different, but perhaps there are some commonalities that can bring us together, that can allow for new groups to come together, for new conversations to come together around housing and income and employment and education. And perhaps there can be some new strategies, new momentum for strategies that can allow us to reach across the aisle in new ways to create new initiatives, new policies, and new opportunities for all of these groups that would benefit all.
So what you're saying is, like, maybe I'm saying this, that maybe our state assembly people and state senators should look at this map and get together with people who have the same kinds of challenges that they have in their own areas and try and work out policy based on that rather than based on, oh, you're in the north and you're in the south.
I really would love to see this tool used. And one of our main target groups to use this tool is policymakers. So be they at the state level or at the national level. When you look at this map, you can choose your level of ranking. You can look at Wisconsin, for instance, as just compared to Wisconsin, or you can look at Wisconsin as compared to the full U.S. And depending upon who you are, depending upon the type of policymaker you are, you may be interested in those different vantage points. However, this would be wonderful to bring more of our policymakers together around real change in these areas of the social determinants of health, because they are commonalities. They are experiences that we are sometimes challenged by. We all want high quality education. We all want good, safe housing. We all want access to good quality medical care. Everyone should have the opportunity to be healthy. And this is something that we hope that our policymakers will be able to use as a tool to craft new strategies, to think of new ways, to try to improve these factors across the state and across the country.
Medical care is an issue in urban environments, inner city urban environments, as well as rural environments. There's a lack of medical care in both of those environments.
Yes, accessibility is a challenge in both of those places for slightly different reasons, obviously, but accessibility is a challenge. And could these types of metrics, for instance, be used to more precisely target opportunities or incentives for the development of additional health infrastructure in those areas? Could that be? Or could we use these types of metrics to bring together our traditional social service partners with our healthcare partners to allow for better integration, to allow for a more holistic approach to health? That would be a wonderful opportunity. And because these metrics are available on the full U.S., suddenly these types of conversations could be had at the federal level as well.
We are talking to Dr. Amy Kind about data that she collected and put into a mapping project that shows health outcomes or possible health outcomes neighborhood by neighborhood across the United States. You can go to this mapping project. Also, it's the link is at our website. And what is the website directly to it?
Yes, the website is at www.neighborhoodatlas.wisc.edu. It's a long one.
I love the university. They never let us have just a regular, a quick access URL. But if you look up health mapping website, if you Google that, you'll be able to find it too. You can also go to our website, WPR.org. One of the things I was interested in is Puerto Rico is part of this.
It is.
Puerto Rico is part of the United States. It's not a state.
It is.
But it is a territory, and people there are citizens. And so they are pretty devastated right now. Mm-hmm. They have yet to recover from the hurricane of last year. What did you find there?
So I personally have never been to Puerto Rico, but I'm aware of certainly the news coverage, and the challenges are profound, there's no doubt. When we look at Puerto Rico on this metric, on this particular map, what we see is a large swath of very challenged neighborhoods, particularly when you look at it from the national vantage point. So there are clusters of less challenged neighborhoods around certain cities, and then pretty much the rest of the island is highly disadvantaged.
And when did you collect this data? This is from the census, right?
So this data was collected by the American Community Survey and the U.S. Census. So they collect these on a regular rolling basis, and we use their metrics over a five-year collection period to sum up into these single-year markers. So we will be updating the atlas for metrics on an every five-year scale, because that's how the data are collected. And we hope that it's something that we can continue to use and refine, and hearing from our users about other ways that it could be employed. One of the particularly exciting pieces of the metric for someone like me in research or for health policymakers is that in addition to the maps, we also allow data downloads. If anyone's interested, these data downloads are completely free, and they allow you to link any sort of data set by zip code or by census block group number to the score, the neighborhood disadvantage score, across the country. And there are more than around 70 million zip codes represented within these data. So lots of opportunities there for many users.
We are talking to Dr. Amy Kind, who has put together a health mapping project so you can figure out how healthy your neighborhood potentially is. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us. We do love tweets, and we want to get more of them at WPR Mornings. Have you noticed that your neighborhood impacts your overall health? Did you recently move to a better neighborhood and you're like, wow, I didn't realize how relaxed I would feel in doing this? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk a little bit about the map to begin with. Okay, so I live in Madison. So I'm going to put in my address, and it's going to show me something about my neighborhood and about the neighborhoods around me. What else am I going to know from this?
So from this map, you can get a sense for the entire state. You can zoom in and look at your street. You can type in your own address, get a sense for the relative disadvantage around you. Certainly, as a clinician, this is helpful for me because we see patients from all over. Many of our patients don't just necessarily come from the cities that we're based in, or where our clinic is, or where our hospital is. Particularly for healthcare systems that offer advanced technologies, they may be drawing in patients from multi-state regions. So we as clinicians cannot possibly know every neighborhood within those multi-state regions. So tools like this give us additional opportunities to spark conversations with our patients, because some of these issues are hard to talk about. We started talking a little bit about the importance of good quality housing and diabetes care, for instance. If you don't have access to regular refrigeration, you can't afford to keep your electricity on all the time, your insulin will spoil. It won't be used. Won't be helpful. So getting into these issues around social determinants of health is really important for us as a clinical community, and new tools to allow us to do this, hopefully, will trigger these conversations.
So we were talking during the break about people coming in and being embarrassed to talk about this kind of stuff. And it occurs to me that if a doctor, and this is a great tool for a doctor to say, oh, your address is, and then put it in the map and see how your neighborhood fares. But how does a doctor bring this up and get past that embarrassment? And also, is this a privacy issue?
Those are two very good questions. The both of them are very, very important. So let's first talk about the privacy issue. All of the data that are included within the map are freely available, actually, right now, but through the U.S. Census and the American Community Survey. But they can typically only be accessed by a very narrow group of people called geoanalytics, geoanalysts. And you need special expertise, technical expertise, in order to really use these data.
Politicians generally use this data, right? To target neighborhoods and target specific groups of voters?
I actually don't know the answer to that.
I think that is...
apologize to that.
That's okay. You're a doctor.
I am a doctor.
Not a political scientist.
I am a doctor.
Yes, I got it.
In my world, groups like the Centers for Disease Control might use it for a disease outbreak.
Ah, okay.
To look at where a certain disease is happening, for instance. But again, you needed this very technical degree. And one of the really exciting things about this map is that anyone can use it. You don't need a really advanced technical degree anymore to access these data. And so we have been hearing from users across the country, including places like smaller universities, smaller healthcare systems, or even medium and large size systems who didn't previously have access to these types of data and are very excited to use them.
Okay, so let's get then to the embarrassed part. Mm. So I come in, and my neighborhood is a red neighborhood for whatever reason. And I live kind of in a blue area. Mm. If I come to the doctor, that's one step. And it's probably because I'm really sick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then the doctor says to me, oh, I see your neighborhood's not that great. Like, how does the doctor approach this to deal with the sort of embarrassment of the patient?
Well, I as a clinician, it would just be a trigger for me to start the conversation. Certainly, just because you're living in a very wealthy neighborhood does not mean that you are yourself very wealthy. Mm. A neighborhood has a whole variety of individuals in it, just like a county has a variety of neighborhoods. And so it's the beginning of a conversation where we can start talking about, how is your housing? Do you have any concerns about your refrigeration? How easy is it for you to get the food you need? What kind of food did you eat yesterday? Mm. What did you do yesterday? And so we have all sorts of triggers and flags that are already built into our daily medical decision making that help us understand if someone is at risk for diabetes, at risk for hypertension, and trigger other questions for us to begin with. And so this is yet another one of those type tools that could be used in that way.
And yet doctors have to be careful not to say, oh, you come from a wealthy neighborhood, so you're obviously good, you're healthy, because there are issues that come with that also.
Yes, this should just, at the individual patient level, this really should be the beginning of a conversation, another tool to trigger a deeper conversation, because the solutions to a particular person's challenges will vary depending upon what those challenges are and what their particular barriers are.
Personalized medicine. We are looking at a map that was put together by our guest, Dr. Amy Kind, that looks at neighborhood by neighborhood outcomes for health disparities. We would like to take your calls. It is 6:40 in the morning. Time to start calling, folks. 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. You could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Have you noticed that your neighborhood affects your overall health? Have you moved to a new neighborhood, good or bad, and thought, wow, I don't really feel comfortable here, and your stress levels are going up? That could also mean that you move to a wealthier neighborhood that would have your stress levels go up. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back in a moment. It's the morning show. It's a morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. UW-Madison researchers have maps that track how your neighborhood might affect your health. It digs down to the zip code level, zip code by zip code, anywhere in the country. You can see this map on our website, or you can just Google neighborhood maps, and you will find it there. 800-642-1234 is the number to call if you have questions about where you live. Ideas@WPR.org is the email. We do have a caller. Katrina, welcome to the program. Hello?
I am concerned that that I think the government should check on the quality of water in inner cities. You hear about lead contaminants, and that can lower the children's IQs, and you and I think for sure the they should be using every method possible to root out the druggies. And that's my comment.
Okay, thank you so much, Katrina. So I want to take this and talk about water quality. We actually just had a show on water a couple of days ago. Water quality is a problem all over the state. There are lead contamination issues in old towns, whether they be Milwaukee or Madison, or a town, you know, up near Lake Superior. So that is definitely an issue. And also the opioid crisis. It doesn't really reflect on this map because that goes across socioeconomic boundaries. It is early in the morning. But talk to me about what this map can do to help researchers start to zero in on this.
Absolutely. So this can provide researchers with a new tool by which to understand how the social determinants of health might be impacting things like opioid addiction or patterns of different types of disease incidents. It also may reflect some of the environmental exposures that our patients and our people in our state experience. So it is provides a new tool that gives a new vantage point towards health disparities that are experienced across the United States. And when we think of health disparities, so often the research, very important research, but it describes the problem. And describing the problem is a critical first step. But in order to move to the next step of developing solutions, addressing these issues in meaningful ways, we need to move towards a more mechanistic view of these associations, of these things like addictions and social determinants of health and other things. So the National Institutes of Health have been very excited about this particular tool because it does give a brand new way of viewing the experiences that our patients and our people within the United States and the state of Wisconsin have had. In regard to health disparities and in regard to these other diseases.
So I want to talk a little bit about how doctors are going to use this again, because doctors tend to be people who know what they know and are very proud of what they know. And here you come and say, here's a new tool that we think you can use. And there may be people who say, sorry, I'm not going to use that. How do you convince people to keep using these tools?
You know, it's interesting. With talking to many of my colleagues, some of the things that frustrate us the most are these issues surrounding the social determinants of health, because many of us go into the medical profession because we want to make things better. We want to better lives of our patients. We want to better lives of our individuals. And I have had patients, particularly when I did my training on the East Coast, who I had to bring back to the hospital again and again and again for the same condition, all because I couldn't provide them with better housing, or I couldn't do anything about getting them access to healthy food. And it felt very frustrating for me as a clinician and for our health health system too. For me, it didn't make a lot of sense that I could provide this person with repeated extensive hospitalizations, but I couldn't get them the simple thing like a $250 air conditioner that might have kept them out of the hospital.
Mm.
So it's this providing our physicians and our healthcare teams in general, not just physicians, but our nurses and our social workers and others, with new tools and new opportunities to engage partners and to help our health policymakers see that healthcare is not just about the pill and the technology, but it's also about where we live, the food we eat, the water we drink, the education we've had. These things are critically, critically important to health. And I am afraid that the healthcare trajectory in our country for certain populations is not all that great, to be frank with you. And so we need new solutions. We need new alternatives. We desperately need to move the needle on health disparities in the United States, to move towards health equity. And hopefully this tool takes a small step in that direction.
So we've been talking, the assumption underlying our talk is that we're talking about adults, but we're also talking about kids who live in these neighborhoods, and kids who live in more disadvantaged neighborhoods. Often the disadvantage is a trauma that they grow up with. It sinks in with them. So how do we deal with that sort of, you know, trauma and getting kids out of that loop?
Well, I think addressing some of these structural characteristics are critical. You know, everyone deserves to live healthy lives. They need to have the opportunity to live healthy lives. And so if that requires different approaches to ensuring safe, high-quality housing, different approaches to ensuring that everyone has opportunities for high-quality education, opportunities for healthy food and access to that food, safe environments where you don't have to worry about crime. These are things that are fundamental to the human condition. And although I myself am not a pediatrician, there is no doubt that these kinds of factors influence us across our lifespan. They influence kids. They influence anyone in the Middle Ages, but also older adults. I personally care for patients with Alzheimer's disease.
Mm.
And I see these patients in my clinical practice, and I see families doing the best they can to keep their loved ones happy and healthy in their own homes. And it can be harder in certain places than in others. And so having this recognition that more needs to be done, that the social determinants of health matter, that neighborhood matters, is critically important in our healthcare arena. And there hasn't been as much conversation about these issues as I would like there to have been. So hopefully this can be the start. These tools can start more conversations, more research, more opportunities for targeting of resources at the policy level towards improving health in our society.
So we've talked about policy level a few times. You've got the map. It's there. Are you doing anything to connect the policy people to your data?
Well, certainly shows like this hopefully will help. The National Institutes of Health has been very, very supportive talking about this new tool and getting the word out on this new tool. And I would definitely welcome inquiries from anyone who is interested in using it in the policy sphere. In the past, I have worked with and continue to work with groups like the state of Maryland. I've worked with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services on certain programs. There's a particular program called the Everyone with Diabetes Counts program. It's an education outreach program, and that program has used these types of data to allow for more efficient ground-level operations to get the word out about how to prevent and care for diabetes. So, for instance, if you're running a particular state-based program and you want to decide where's the best place to have my sessions, where's the best place to hold these different workshops on diabetes, you can use maps like this or use these kind of data tools to say, wow, this is an area that might benefit this area that's very red and very disadvantaged on the map. Maybe I can find churches or community partners or existing social infrastructure in that area in order to create partnerships that might be more effective in delivering my diabetes education.
What a great idea. We have a Barb from Chippewa County. Barb, welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for the show. I just wanted to give a little personal story about how environment and housing has affected me. I had been out on a hobby farm, 6 acres in the rural area, and, you know, fresh air outside, and then I had some medical problems where I wasn't able to keep it up, so I moved into town in a little two-bedroom apartment, and, you know, all the light pollution and noise pollution has really affected my health, too, and I've gained weight and had some depression just making the big adjustment. So I just thought I would throw that out just as a personal
thank you.
Insight. You're welcome.
Thank you. Feel better. This is an interesting thing that Barb brings up. She had to move because of health issues, and then where she moved made her health issues worse.
Yeah, isn't that something? Neighborhood definitely impacts health, and although I don't know exactly where Barb moved to. Certainly, perhaps it's harder for her to access healthy food or exercise. And these things are real. They're real. And depending upon where we live, we have very different experiences in regards to the social determinants of health. So it's a good example.
It's a good example. Thank you for that, Barb. I appreciate it. We have been talking to Dr. Amy Kind. She's an associate professor of medicine and the director of health services and care research program at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. She put together this really cool neighborhood map, which is designed to help health professionals and policymakers, as we have been talking about, and ourselves, assess how people's geography can affect our physical and mental health. And she has been with us this morning in studio. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.